Welcome to The Nerd Closet, a podcast celebrating the mind of the gay man from high culture to pop culture. I'm Phil Putnam.
And I'm Joe Ferreira, and thank you for pressing play.
This week on the show, Phil discusses his Barry Manilow obsession, a seemingly tactile turnaround for the Republican Party on the issue of gay marriage, and how it all went down just 1 month ahead of the Supreme Court decision on the fate of California's Prop 8. Also, we're spending more and more time with machines and less time with actual friends. Could machines just be our new friends?
I feel like this is like the first time I'm looking at you since I walked into your apartment like 45 minutes ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I feel like I've been buried in my computer.
Yeah, it was really rude.
Like trying to get this set up. No, but it wasn't you, it was me. But no, like we're trying to get the audio set up and everything.
Exactly. And
I just looked at you. Just be like, hi, Joe.
Hi, Phil. How's it going?
I'm good. Well, you know who
you sound great today.
You know why?
Why?
I'm in the mana glow.
The mana glow?
The mana glow. It's glow you have after you go to a Barry Manilow concert.
Yes, and it's one of two puns I've heard on Barry Manilow's name now.
What was this? What was the other one?
Fanilow.
Yeah, that's his fan group.
Did he actually start that?
I actually don't know.
Okay, hypothetical. Would you respect him more or less if he put out the word Fanilow?
Less,
okay.
I think also he is at a level of stardom that he didn't need to. I've been trying to think of an equivalent of him to our generation. And actually, okay, he made the comparison last night, which was pretty funny. He was basically the Justin Bieber of the 70s, of his era. He was. He was a huge pop star. And I went and saw him on Broadway last night. I took my partner because he's a Fanilow. And I sort of Fanilowed through him. I've, adopted it. And, oh my God, I was like gorillas on the mist. I was like Jane Goodall, and I have never seen 45 to 65 year old Jewish women lose their shit like they do over Barry.
Right.
And then also like big gay bears.
Oh, I'm sure.
Big gay bears. I mean, it was just like, and there was like 97% women and 3% gays, and then a few like bedraggled husbands, straight husbands that got,
but like less than 1% at that point.
Far less than 1%.
It wasn't a significant number.
It was almost all women. And I got to tell you, Barry was just everything. I mean, his voice is gilded like a lark, and he makes you, it's a feeling of joy in the room, and he makes you feel like,
oh my gosh,
everything. I mean, it's crazy. I was sitting apart a little bit, like I was more observing, but I was into it. I was like, oh my God, I get it.
Yeah, you get it. The gospel.
I get it. He was preaching totally get the gospel of Barry.
Oh my gosh. It's funny. This is actually the second person today to talk to me about Barry Manilow.
Really?
Yeah. The other was a mid-40s Jewish woman at my office.
See?
Yeah.
There's something to it.
You guys probably would get along great.
Oh my gosh. They go nuts. They go nuts.
It was her second time.
Okay. Yeah. To the Broadway show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that during the show, and it's a tidy 90 minutes. I mean, it's the perfect length.
Gets in, gets out.
All he does is sings the hits because he's got a bazillion of them. But somewhere around the 45-minute mark, there's this person yells out, Barry, you're my idol! And you can just tell, like, it's just this...
Was that a man's voice or a woman's
voice? It was
a
man's.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It was just this jolly gay bear, God bless him, and you know... And it's like, it's totally endearing, but it also sounds like it's like the leader of a prison gang yelling at you, you know? So it's kind of like, it's hard to...
Intimidated and enheartening.
And Barry was like, how do you respond to that? Thank you.
Exactly.
You know, so it was an experience.
I'm going to admit something really quickly, which is that I really don't know a lot of Barry Manilow music.
Totally fine. I have to also admit that I wasn't... Like, I know most of the choruses of his big hits, but it definitely was kind of before our time. He's just been so consistent, though, with his hits in TV and film, and that he just is kind of still in the ether.
recent hits? Like, he's producing albums
No,
still?
Not new hits, okay, no. Okay. But his stuff still gets used in pop culture constantly.
Sure.
And then he actually sang a song from a musical that he's composed called Harmony. So I don't know if that's being produced or whatnot, but he sang one song from that musical.
And you liked?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely Barry Manilow. So it was sort of a flavor of what the musical might be.
Sure.
You know, but in the same way that, like, I'm writing a musical, the style is my songs in a musical theater format.
Of course.
So it's, you know, I was like, I was championing it. I was like, sweet, you know?
Just a really quick transition there. Cyndi Lauper's new musical, Kinky Boots, mm-hmm. is about to open or yeah. has opened now, and yep. I'm not sure. And so that's one that I'm interested to go and see, and it will have perhaps... a non-show tune feel to the
Maybe.
Music. We'll see
yeah.
what exactly she brings to it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm still... it's hard to explain exactly why he impacts you this way. But but that's why he's a star. That's why he's a star. He moves people. And I don't think it's that these women are like into him sexually, because everybody knows he's gay. But... I think it's more that he knows how they feel.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he gets them on the emotional
empathy.
Front.
Empathy, yeah. There's yeah. some sort of synergy going on. They
yeah.
feel connected, yeah.
And I loved it because my partner loved it. He was so happy, and I was so happy that he was so happy. And and from a vocal standpoint, the guy sounds amazing. I mean, his voice is aged beautifully, and he can still belt it out.
About how old is he?
Oh, I mean, I don't want to piss anybody off here. He's certainly over 60.
Okay.
I might even put him like around 65, but he's definitely got the chops.
And you know what? That's nice. Like, I remember watching Barbara Cook once uh-huh. sometime in New York, and she's older even than that. And she still has it. Like, obviously there wasn't like the type of power that like youth voices have,
sure.
but well-trained. Right.
Yeah.
She was definitely,
well, she's Barbara Cook.
She was so well-trained.
Exactly.
So, perfect.
Okay. So I'm just sitting here in the man aglow.
And it is something to look at. I watch it emanate from you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
It's almost visible. So, dear listeners at home, if you have ever been in the man aglow, tweet at us and let us know. I'm at Phil Putnam Music.
And I'm at Joe Redhead.
All right. Next topic?
Let's do the news.
Yeah, let's do the news.
Political news.
Big gay news.
Big gay news.
Big
going
gay
on.
News.
Yeah.
And genuinely moving, I have to say. Prop 8 case is coming up before the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And this past week, a number of very prominent national Republican elected officials stunned everybody and started reversing their positions to step up in support of gay marriage and to speak out and to oppose Prop 8. For those who need a refresher, Prop 8 was the anti-gay marriage bill in California back in, I believe, 2008. And
which was a huge disappointment.
Huge disappointment.
And I think very much funded by conservative money and religious money, just like pouring into the state.
Yeah, and religious money outside of California.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So even though it was a state vote, it was a national issue even then. And anyway, longer story shorter... several, like more than 75 really powerful, big name Republicans, including John Huntsman,
mm-hmm.
the governor of Utah, Meg Whitman, who's not a political official, but she did run for governor of California on a staunch Republican values and big business, pro-business platform. They've both signed an amicus brief along with a bunch of other prominent Republicans saying that they believe Prop 8 is unconstitutional and the Supreme Court should strike it down. On top of that, then Obama stepped in the next day and said that the administration would also file a brief in support of defeating Prop 8, which basically means support of gay marriage on a national level. So many things I find interesting about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not to mention that, you know, basically the Republicans in this way are leading Obama, which is, it should be an embarrassment to him. But secondly, in my lifetime, I never, ever thought I would see some of these Republicans reverse direction on this. And seemingly out of the blue, I mean, recent politics in Washington has been all about the budget. And the standoff between Boehner and Obama, between the House and the legislature, and you know, and the executives. So it kind of took me by surprise, and it really moved me. And I just want to kind of talk about what do you think is motivating this for the Republicans, and what does it mean to you?
Oh, see, and I absolutely have a response. You say that recent politics have focused on economics, and that's absolutely true, but I think that the Republicans ran for the presidential office on a mostly economic ticket. I mean, that was everything that they talked about, is how bad the economy is, how we're going to make it better. And when it ultimately didn't win them the office, a lot of the outcry from them afterwards is that, well, the country is just changing, right? So certainly the demographics were a big thing that they blamed, which is why I think you see them going after Latinos through a lot of, like, crazy, you know, both in people they nominate or in topics that they bring up. I remember...
And by crazy, we mean Marco Rubio.
Exactly, exactly. Sure. Marco Rubio, exactly. But, you know, so I feel like now they're trying to do this thing where they connect with each minority group they can. And for a long time, I think they've been opposed to marriage equality and all sorts of gay rights issues as civil rights issues, because their base isn't in support of it. But now that I think the leadership is worried about ever getting back into the Oval Office, and getting more of their people into the House and the Senate, the leadership is having to shift and is having to address some of these minority groups. And I think that's probably what these 75 people came together to do. What I think is interesting, though, is now we have the leader of the Democratic Party and some leaders of the Republican Party all throwing their support behind these marriage equality cases.
Yeah.
Where is the actual population? Like, where are the Republican voters? Are they going to keep up with their leadership?
That's a really good question.
Or because, is it just going to
This is a Supreme Court issue that's happening right now. It's not a popular vote issue.
No.
But I think perhaps what the Republicans realized is that the majority of Americans for the first time favor marriage equality. And if they ever have a hope of getting back into the Oval Office and also holding on to their congressional and Senate seats, that they have to stop heavily campaigning on social issues that do not reflect where the pulse of the country is at. I think that's what gives me a little bit of hope and what potentially moves me about this. And I don't trust it yet. I mean, it's still so new.
Sure.
It's kind of like the person who's been just beating the crap out of you for the past 100 years suddenly starts being nice to you. After a week, you don't just suddenly think, oh, they've changed. However, I think that it's a hell of a way for them to start.
Yeah.
It is especially surprising to me that they chose to start it in the context of the Supreme Court, because that's one of the places where, you know, Republican power brokers, and well, both sides of the aisle, sure, they really try to manipulate the selection of Supreme Court justices based upon moral values. You know, abortion, gay marriage, that's right, what they care about when you're trying to find out where a presidential candidate stands on right, Supreme Court justices. So I am kind of wondering what's going to happen. SCOTUS blog, which is a blog that really kind of tracks and reports on the actions and decisions of the Supreme Court, they made a good point about how an amicus brief, which is what's being filed, which is basically a friend of the court brief, has never actually been cited as being a significant influence on a Supreme Court outcome to date. So they think that this actually may be the first time that an amicus brief is cited as a significant influence.
Well, and even if it's not a significant influence in the decision, it is definitely a significant PR move. And I would argue that that's more on the line for them, is they're trying to change some sort of public perception, rather than influence the actual court. Can I ask you one question about these court decisions?
Of course.
Are you afraid? I had read one thing where people were, you know, some people are obviously excited that this is up. The Supreme Court might overturn Prop 8 and restore that freedom. But there are people saying, you know, what if they uphold it? Like, what if this doesn't go in favor of marriage equality? How far does that set us back? You know what I mean? It's like a bad decision by the court. Are you afraid of that? Is there any fear of that? Or are you like, full steam ahead, we're going to get this?
I'm certainly afraid they're going to say no, because I would always be afraid they would say no, regardless of how good things look right now. I think that if they did uphold Prop 8, I do think that it would be a significant blow to constitutionality in America. I think it's because there is no way you can faithfully interpret the Constitution and state that legislating discrimination into actual written law in America is constitutional. There's just no way you can support that argument. This is a moral argument, the objection to marriage equality, but but people who have been against it have successfully got it into legislation. However, and I do think that it would be a blow to the mentality and the morale that's fighting for marriage equality.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, I think one of the benefits is that this is the Supreme Court deciding on a state case, so they may be willing to hear another state case down the road. They're not deciding on DOMA now. They're deciding on Prop 8, which was a state issue. So,
I think they are. DOMA is coming up, though.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that this decision right now is about Prop 8. So I would be much more concerned if the wind was pointing, you know, against gay marriage equality and the decision in front of them was DOMA.
Okay. But for now, it is still isolated to one state.
Yeah.
So the damage is also, how do we say this? There's a limited liability.
And also, I don't really know what to make yet of the Republican strategy here. Honestly, it's all strategy. There's no question. And just everything in politics is strategy.
Right,
even if it's motivated by passions and beliefs, it's still all strategic. So I don't quite know what to make of it yet. It's such a sharp turn. I do think that from a purely objective strategy standpoint, it's very smart on their part, because hopefully they did take stock after they lost the White House and they realized we really are completely out of touch. We ran especially our primary campaigns on social issues almost entirely, and the country just consistently rejected that approach. So hopefully it's signaling a change in what the Republicans focus on, and maybe some of the national conversations can evolve.
See, and I couldn't agree more. I think it's absolutely that. As soon as the central figurehead of the Democratic Party came out and said, I'm in support of this, and it really looked like it was going to happen, then that wrong side of history clause became real and kicked in, and they were like, we have to shift. We have to shift now.
Yeah. Well, we'll just see what happens.
Bated breath.
Yes. Marriage equality. Go, go, go. So, you've found something that I find just completely fascinating.
Well, I hope it spins into something that you find completely fascinating. So I'm reading this book right now, and it's called The Big Disconnect. It's written by Giles Slade, and he is writing on the topic of technology and humans and how we anthropomorphize technology, and basically, he's sort of a doomsayer when it comes to all this stuff. He kind of thinks that we are going to end up losing our humanity, losing what is good about life, and just like turn it all over to the machines. Like, really, he's kind of like on that course. But there are some things that are true in what he says. For example, one of his opening arguments is that fewer and fewer people have friends and confidants in the numbers that they once had. More people have more friends on Facebook, but at home, they have lonely dwellings where they divert themselves and the empty hours with technological distractions, including the internet, HDTV, videos, electronic games, and other entertainment systems. And he goes on to explain, we are spending less and less time each day actually interfacing with people and more time interfacing with technology, which I think is probably inarguable. But then where he takes it is this place where, since we are spending more time with technology, we need to make our technology more human-like, right? And so,
as in, like, AI?
As in, a little bit as in AI, a little bit as in your phone talks to you, right?
Like Siri.
A little bit as in things have cute names now, you know, every now and then. Phone cases, this is the one that I said to you originally, which really perked you up, which is that he compared buying phone cases to buying outfits for your phone as if it were actually a doll. Or if it were actually a child. I guess that's where he's really taking it. Is that
like buying a sweater for a dog.
Or like buying a sweater for a dog. Mm-hmm. However, now that I live in New York and I see how cold it is sometimes, I understand dog sweaters
it
in
totally
extreme
makes
circumstances.
Sense. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
When I was in California, I was like, who dresses their dog up? Why are you doing that? And now that I'm here, I'm like, put some clothes on your dog. Who are you? It's freezing.
Exactly.
So inhumane. However, okay, so but then As far as putting clothes on your phone.
I want to stick with, like, I'm trying to envision what an outfit for a phone or an iPad would look like.
Oh, I have an immediate.
Just like a case that was in the design of clothes, or does it actually have, like, the shape of clothing?
No, he doesn't mean, I don't think he means actual clothes. I think he means, like, those bedazzled jewel cases.
Okay.
Which, someone could obviously argue that this is self-expression on your part. Mm-hmm. But his argument is that we are starting to care for, nurture these machines that nurture us back. And, like, that this is the real relationship we have now, is that you spend more time with your computer than you do with probably most of your friends. And,
well, I mean,
it bends you and you bend it, and, like, you're, like, growing together.
Yeah. I mean, if entertaining the thought here.
Sure.
Like, it's a joke. My laptop, its name is Tom. It's an acronym. It stands for the other man.
The other man.
Yeah, because he sits in my lap and keeps it warm. Like, I touch Tom. I touch my laptop more than I touch my partner.
Right.
It's one of my most intimate objects. It sits on my lap, or my phone is in my hand. I touch it more than any other object in my life on a day-to-day basis. You know, even more than myself. Come on, you knew. It was just sitting, right there. Exactly. So, a little sex appeal for the folks at home. But I can understand that maybe we started out thinking that our devices and our computers were conduits to communication with other people. And they may still be for most people. I do think that it's not entirely off base to say that most people have a relationship with their devices, even if it is only as a conduit to connecting with other people. And the whole thing about conversation through online, through social networking, replacing regular human contact conversation, I can totally see that, because now culturally we accept conversation on Facebook or on Twitter as a form of actual conversation. We don't relegate it to, well, that's only online conversation anymore.
It's that someone said to me, like,
yeah,
if they wrote you a Facebook message, it's as good as if they passed you on the street. Like, they were making, like, an effort to talk to
you. Almost in the sense that if you call me, it's seen as more of an invasion of my privacy than if you text me, which allows me to sort of decide whether I respond or not.
Right. And below texting is Facebook messaging.
It's Facebook messaging. Like, if a dude asks you out on Facebook message, it's seen as, like, the lowest form, right?
Well, or not even, it's just, like, you don't even, oh my gosh. When you're on Facebook, you see other people's faces sliding past you. So there's the potential that they were just reminded of your existence instead of actually, like, wanting to seek you out, which is why I think sometimes, if the Facebook message is something quick like, hey, or happy birthday, you know what I mean? I'm like, I don't really care. I mean, thank you, everyone. Thank you for the happy birthday wishes. Yeah. But also, you were bored. Like that's what I think of some Facebook communication, is like, you were spending time on this thing. I hold email in very high regard. And I know that email in its own way is killing, well, obviously snail mail and perhaps other like types of interpersonal communication. But for me, if I've met a new friend, when we've reached a certain level, I must have your email, because that's how I send you articles I think you're going to like, plan weekends with you, like all of that.
That's how you relate to them.
It's also just like how I organize. I think really it's that's how I organize my actual life and where I'm going to be. And I ask people where they're going to be and we make plans. It's like email is what I want for making plans. I don't want to Facebook back and forth about meeting this weekend. I would rather email always. Yeah,
but do you see using email in that way as an expression of a relationship with a hardware device? Or is that more just the way you relate to people through a communication forum?
I see it as relating directly to people.
Yeah, I do too.
Email to me, there's not like... Right. It's not a relationship with the computer. It's a relationship with people.
What's interesting, I think, though, is there is a tactile aspect to our hardware devices, especially with a touchscreen phone.
Yeah.
It's interactive. It's tactile. So when you are becoming used to having that in your life, it's being reinforced through the emotional and through the physical. So it's two forms of reinforcement. And it just, it makes that connection and that message that much deeper.
Like when you walk out the door and your phone's not in your pocket and you feel it.
Yeah. Like I had,
oh my God.
I had that last night when we were walking out to Manilow. I was like, something is wrong. And I realized it right when the elevator got to our lobby. And I was like, oh my God, I don't have my phone. And my partner was like, do you need it? And I was like, yeah, I do. And I guess I technically did, even though I could have been fine without it. But I right. just, it would have been odd to not have it on me.
I want to really quickly go back to naming, because it's interesting mm-hmm. that you named this. It's interesting that you named your computer. I have not named my computer or my iPhone, but I have named a set of speakers that I own.
Okay.
Which it's, you've seen them. They're my Jambox, like little yeah. blue brick thing.
Sure.
And sometimes I call it Jammy. If it's just like Justin and I at home, I'll be like, let's turn on Jammy. Which like, I'm not sure how that happened. But otherwise, I don't think there's another technological thing I've named, but I certainly know of people naming their phones, cradling their laptops in their arms and petting them, you know what I mean?
For real?
I just have one memory of a girl. She had a new MacBook. I commented on it, said it looked very nice, and she like picked it up and held it in a like mother, you know, Madonna and child way, and then said, "It's my baby." And I kind of never let that image out of my mind.
Well, you know, as long as she doesn't try to breastfeed it.
Exactly. Wow. She needs a USB port.
Okay, but, so let's.
Okay, so never mind.
No, so let's. That's really funny, actually. Let's actually wrap this up with predictions. Where do you think this is headed? Like a year from now, what do you think Americans' relationship will be with their, or and not just Americans, everyone. What do you think the relationship will be with our hardware devices?
Well, I'll answer a bigger, like, where is technology going question, which is, for a while, I thought, all right, we've achieved the internet, right? We've achieved touchscreen technology and all kinds of recording and lots of computational power. Like, we can, we have amazing apps, amazing programs, video, audio, upload, download, communication, all of that's as high as it can be.
Yeah.
I think the next step is biology integrating. Like, I think we will just have faster, 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 faster iPhones until there's something biological about them. I think we've reached a certain plateau, and the next thing is when it plugs into you. Crazy.
I think that, well, I know that technology is being pursued. So I don't think it's crazy. It's certainly not on the consumer level yet, but it's certainly something that research and development departments are definitely pursuing.
It's also something that flips me out. Like, I'm so scared of it. Yeah.
Well, my prediction is not so much that's the next step. I think the next step is wearable computers. So I think that we're actually going to see computers integrated into our apparel first before they're integrated into our bodies. Like the Google Glasses, that's a perfect sure. example of a wearable that computer. Is right. But I think we'll also find that technology and fashion are going to combine more and more, because it's the step between our device being in our hand and our device being in our body. It's what we put on our body.
Right.
That's the middle layer. So that's where I think we're headed next.
I'm totally impressed. That's a great answer. That's a great answer, and it falls between now and what I'm thinking about.
Well, you know where I learned it?
I have no idea.
Project Runway.
Did you really?
I know. It's really gay.
I didn't know they were that into technology.
Well, it was a few seasons ago.
Oh, okay.
Some kicky Asian girl. She loved wearable computers. I never forgot it.
I like that a lot.
Good times. Are you ready for A-side B-side?
I'm totally ready. Yay! For A-side B-side.
So I am bringing a song from an artist today that I am unashamedly in love with, and her name is Kesha.
Oh, yes.
And
good.
There's
yes.
a place in my little gay heart for Kesha. And her latest album, Warrior, which is not completely recent. It's probably about 2 months old now. Mm-hmm. It has pretty much universally been panned. I do have to say from the get, I do not think as highly of it as her first two. However, there are some gems and also some very unexpected turns that I think are worth noting on the Warrior album. And one of them is the song I'm bringing in today. It's very different for our Kesha, and it's called Wonderland.
Wonderland.
From Warrior.
All right.
Bye, Kesha.
Let's do it.
I was just a young kid with time to waste. Living out of my car, those were the days. We were all the wild ones. The wasted youth, other than a dream, had nothing to lose. Ain't it funny how time flies, fades into gold? Now I wanna do a drive-by, but I can't find the
interesting. Well, and here's the thing. Okay, if you had just played it first and not said it was Kesha, I probably wouldn't have identified it.
Yeah.
Because I'm so used to her being like, blah, ah, 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 like very, like, heavily,
and you're
like,
just pounding. Not, yeah, and you're just waiting for the bass to drop.
Or,
yeah.
Or like, auto-tune to happen, which mm-hmm. I'm sure some auto-tune. But, like, my point is, it's such a different aesthetic from anything that I associate her
yeah.
with, and not actually bad.
And I feel like she pulled it off.
I like her. You said you loved her, and you kind of, like, acted, like, coy about it, but I think she's really cool. Like, her
yeah.
all of her first albums, like, multiple songs that I adore, and she writes for other people, which is always, like, to me, like,
yeah,
a,
that's a good
thing.
Barometer of
yeah.
skill. I, you know, I think that at first I thought, oh, she's just trashy and glittery, and then Blow from, I think it's from Animal, or maybe it's from Cannibal, whatever record it's from, it totally hooked me in. It's just such a fun listen. And then I got really into a bunch of songs, and actually Animal, that song moves me. It's
yeah.
a really moving song. And And so I kind of got beyond, like, the glitter trash of her.
Sure.
And I was really excited for Warrior to come out. And I, like I said, I think as a record, as a whole, it's weak mm-hmm. compared to the previous stuff. But Wonderland is just kind of this really unexpected, refreshing moment. And I feel like she actually does do it convincingly.
Yeah. It was kind of nice to hear her do something else.
Mm-hmm. No, I think, like, you know, she's basically a 24-year-old millionaire kind of bemoaning, you know, her lost youth. Right. So, like, how difficult life is now.
And it's a little, we feel bad for you?
It's, like, maybe a little much. But still, I can't not sing along when that song comes on. I love harmonizing to it, and I like sharing it.
Wonderful.
Good times.
Good times.
Wonderful. Wonderland.
Wonderland.
Segway.
Segway.
Exactly. Okay, tell us about your song.
My song's called Segway. no, actually, so the song I brought here tonight, it's a group that I don't know very much about. I feel like I'm not going out on a limb by choosing this song. The group is Metric. The song is called...
Oh, yeah.
The song is Help, I'm Alive.
Okay.
So you must know that, right?
I've heard of it, but I haven't heard it.
You've heard of it, but you haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to play it for you. I think it's very interesting. I think it has sort of a strange structure as songs go, which really hooked me. Kind of like two different bridges,
okay.
two different choruses.
Okay.
Maybe that's what I'm saying. It's two different choruses, like every time it comes around. Anyway, I'm going to play it. Totally hooked me.
Awesome. So it's Metric, Help, I'm Alive?
Metric, Help, I'm Alive.
Okay, let's do it.
Thank you. like a hammer.
I have some mixed emotions, which is a good thing. If you have mixed emotions from a song, that's a good thing.
And it's a very mixed song.
Yeah, it's got a couple different main grooves in it, which is fun.
Sure.
It's long. It's a long song for such a repetitive song.
You know what? I kind of think that. I think there's a place a minute from the end that should be the end.
Yeah, and you know, that just sometimes that happens. Sometimes we just produce songs that are too long. Right. You know, it really fun. Like I was bopping, I was harmonizing along, you know, near the end. So it definitely, I feel it, you know. And I love her voice.
Yeah.
I really do love her voice.
Well, and I think it's well produced, but I want to ask, like, do you see what I'm saying where I'm like, I feel like there's like A section, B section, C section, and then it goes back to B and back to C and then back to A, B. Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of.
Yeah. I think the B and C section are different enough that you couldn't really call it a pre-chorus and then a chorus.
That's what I'm losing my words. Like I don't have a way to express like what they both are.
Yeah. I mean, normally, like songwriting structure, you would maybe say it's pre-chorus and chorus, but they're so different. Yeah. And I do have to say, whenever you get to something that feels like the chorus and it seems like it has less energy than what preceded it, I feel like it's always kind of a bummer.
Right.
So I feel like in that case, that's the way it is, which is like the beating like a hammer, that pounding, you know, four on the floor bass drum.
Sure.
And then it gets to the more syncopated groove. You know? And I'm like, oh, that's a little bit of a letdown. I would like it to just go even further when it gets to the chorus. However, I don't feel like I can really say what the chorus is.
Exactly.
So it's, I like that it throws me off a little bit, because whenever you can just put a little bit of a wrinkle in the pop songwriting format, I feel like that's a little bit of a victory.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well said, Phil. Oh, my goodness.
It's almost like I do this for a living.
A wrinkle in the pop. Exactly.
Well, is that our little rainbow fantasy for the week? Are we,
I've had plenty of rainbow fantasies this week already. Which exactly are you referring to?
I meant, like, is that our episode for the week?
That is our rainbow. Yes, our rainbow fantasy
for the week. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Again, if you want to get at us, go ahead and tweet at us. I'm at Phil Putnam Music.
And I'm at Joe Redhead.
And also, we have email.
That is true.
You can also email us at, I believe it's nerdclosetpodcast@gmail.com.
That is what it is.
And we will read it, and we will respond with vigor.
We're very faithful about responding.
Exactly. As you heard earlier, Joe is very passionate about email.
Yes, exactly. It's how you know you're a true friend.
Exactly. So be our true friend. Email us, nerdclosetpodcast@gmail.com.
And it's a Gmail account, so you know it's not our, like, secondary fake account.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
It's just our, it's our primary fake account.
If we didn't like you, we would give you nerdpodcastcloset@yahoo.com.
Exactly. So bask in our love. Tune in next time, and thank you for listening.
Bye, y'all.